amidst the flaming rubble and the war-torn bodies, Blood and Black Rum Podcast brings you Red Hot 80s Action Summer Part 3, Back to Duty. Another heaping hunk of buff, beefy, brawny men sweating it out in the jungles in communist countries you know and love. We've got hits from Arnold, Jackie Chan, the Texas Ranger himself, and more. Stay tuned the whole month of August as we cover these action hits.
Hey, welcome back to the Blood and Black Rum Podcast. I'm Ryan from CoolSploitation.com, and I'm joined with my co-host, Martin.
How's it going?
We are doing well. We're here with the last episode in part three of our Red Hot 80s Action Summer, winding down the summer season, which...
I forgot the tagline.
Yeah, part three is Back to Duty.
There you go. You can't drop it. If you're going to have the subtitle, you got to throw it in there.
It's true, the unnecessarily long name that cuts off the movie title when you go to look on the podcast app and you see like, I don't know what the fuck this show is about.
Well, that's why you do the nice little title cards for each episode so they can tell when they're clicking on it. Like,
it's true.
This Delta.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Oh, who's this man with a mustache in Police Story 2? That's Jackie Chan. Holy shit!
It's kind of funny because we're winding down. So. Summer's ending, which is fine with me. Like, I'm not a big summer fan. I think it's the most overamped part of the seasons. People really love summer for whatever reason. They love skin cancer. They love, you know, dying in the heat. But I don't. And so I'm not super sad about coming to an end with the summer season. But I do think it's interesting that for this Red Hot 80s Action Summer, we picked mostly movies that we didn't actually enjoy that much. I don't know. Is that a trend that we do with the Red Hot 80s Action Summer? It doesn't seem like it, right? Like,
because it's like, it's usually like there's one great one.
Yeah.
One. Fun one bad one, and one mediocre.
Yeah, one that you're like, okay, you know. I feel like for the other ones we picked like ones that we did like, that we knew that we liked, and then there were some that we were like, okay, yep, hadn't really seen this one, but it was fun, and then a couple that were like, yeah, that was not that great, but we knew going into it that it wasn't going to be. This season, I feel like we picked a lot of movies that we actually didn't realize were not going to be that good didn't remember were not being as good as we thought they were. Like the Delta Force.
That's true.
What?
We loved Commando. We both loved
that is true. Commando. Yeah, we did. We did like Commando quite a bit.
Really?
The Delta
Story
Force
2 was very, what was I say? Police Story 2, very good, but disappointing compared to the original.
Mm-hmm.
But and then the Delta Force is just a synth score.
Yeah, that's the only thing you get.
500.
Now we've got one for this.
Real quick.
Oh.
I have a point to bring up. We didn't mention about the Delta Force episode. It pissed me off the entire time when we were watching it. You know, Lee Marvin's supposed to be American hero, right? He's a G.I. Joe badass. All right, boys. Put your badges on, and then they put their American flags on. Did you notice what was all wrong with that?
No.
Put them on the wrong way. Flags facing like it's, you know, just a flag and not, you know, how they have it actually on the uniform with the stars facing forward like you're charging into battle, so the flag would be... Yeah. So, they don't really love America.
I guess not. I guess not.
Yeah. You didn't notice that?
I did not notice that, no. Sorry.
On U.S. Armed Forces, when they have their flag patches, the stars are facing forward, not the stripes. So it's like if you're running into battle, if you were holding the flag, you know, with the wind blowing, that's how it'd be looking. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
So for this, what I was going to say, for this episode... We are doing, I think, a movie that both of us really enjoy. So that's a plus, you know. breaking out of the lull that was the Delta Force last week. And this movie is kind of interesting that we're doing this one because we've never done the original, but we have done the much more recent sequel movie to this franchise, Mad Max Fury Road. So we did do that one, but normally we try to go in a little bit of a like a sequential order. We haven't been able to do that with this one. But that's okay. We're making an exception.
We have OCD, so that's usually why.
Yeah, it kind of bothers us when we don't go in the correct order. But you know what? We'll make an exception for this one because, again, Mad Max did not take place in the 80s. So it didn't release in the 80s. So it kind of falls outside of the scope of this series. So we can't rightfully include it. We have to move on to its sequel, Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior. I'm going to refer to it by its full name, the Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior. I think it kind of had two different names, Mad Max 2 at one point, and then The Road Warrior just by itself.
And yeah, another time. Let's say in Australia, it's just Mad Max 2, but here, because Mad Max 1 didn't get a big release and wasn't really known, Warner Brothers decided to call it The Road Warrior. So you wouldn't feel like you were going into something that you had to see something before.
And how do you feel about that?
I'm fine with that because, if Mad Max really, you know, I imagine it didn't have a big release in America in 79 and 80, you know, I'm fine with that. If you do want to get people to try to go see your movie.
And I think, too, both Mad Max and The Road Warrior, they can really sit outside of each other. You don't need to have seen Mad Max. The film kind of gives you a little recap at the beginning of events in Mad Max.
From the first one.
But
which, if you didn't know any, but I say, if you didn't know anybody, you think it was just, you know, shots from the first, you know, for this movie that they put in black and white.
Right, because, I mean, it not only does it show those in black and white, but it shows just stock footage, too, outside of the events of the movie. So I think, like, it was kind of a masterful, like, introduction, especially for United States viewers who may not have been able to see Mad Max, but The Road Warrior released. To be honest, you don't need to have seen the first one. It can stand alone. And I think that's the kind of the beauty of Mad Max as well, is that all of the movies can really stand alone. You don't really need to have them in a sequential order. So, again, another reason why we're making an exception and we're doing Mad Max 2 out of order.
I do like the Road Warrior name, but I would say I do like the Road Warrior name better.
I think the Road Warrior kind of, again, for one thing, sets it apart. Doesn't need to be sequentially like included within the sequel element. And I think that The Road Warrior has a much more alluring title as well. Mad Max 2, you see it and you're like, yeah, I don't, you know, especially at the time, if you hadn't seen Mad Max 1, you're like, I don't really know what that means. But The Road Warrior, that has like a nice ring to it. So I like that one more as well. I think it works really well, especially for the stuff that takes place in this movie. I like The Road Warrior as a title. And then not only did you have The Road Warrior as a title, but in the 80s, around, you know, the middle of the 80s, you had a lot of Italian ripoff movies of things like The Road Warrior, Star Wars, The Warriors. They all came out around the same time, and there were some great ripoffs of
little late in the mid 80s to be ripping off The Warriors.
But they kind of all went together. Like, it was almost like they were just, you know, churning these out, like, at the same time everybody was seeing these movies, and they were like, huh, these look like something that we should try to emulate. So yeah, things like Exterminators from the Year 3000,
money.
The Bronx Warriors.
I'm convinced Ed Wood never died. He just moved to Italy and became a director.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Also, too, this film is also responsible for one of the greatest wrestling tag teams of all time. The Road
What's
Warriors.
That? Oh, yeah? See, I don't know that much about the...
In WWF, they were called the Legion of Doom because Vince McMahon refuses to have anything that he can't own, so they were renamed to Legion of Doom. But out everywhere else, they were known as the Road Warriors. In their gimmicks, Animal and Hawk, their outfit, they looked like people you would find in Lord Humongous's gang with the spiked shoulder pads and big, beefy, beautiful men.
Sometimes BDSM inspired beautiful men.
But
you've seen The Road Warrior before, I assume.
Yes.
Multiple times, or is this your...
This is probably my fifth time seeing it.
Oh, okay. Well,
I've seen it a couple of times. I remember back in the day, like probably the first two times I saw it was like on DirecTV back in like junior high school. Then I saw it in like college one more time. And then I've seen it on Netflix way back in the day. Like probably right after I got out of college, I first got Netflix. When Mad Max and this, and I think Beyond Thunderdome were all on there.
Mm.
And so... That's, yeah. So it's been like about a decade since I've seen it, but it's still a film that sits pretty fresh in the mind. I've seen it, you know, quite a bit. Not as much as Fury Road. I've seen Fury Road like probably 8 times now. But
yeah, I mean, for me, I've seen it, but it's been a while since I've seen it like in full. So it's nice to sit down and actually just watch it in full and experience it. And I got to experience it with my son as well,
who loves explosions.
Loves explosions. Always wants to be told that everybody is okay. So, of course,
I just love it. People are dying. Are they okay? Yeah, they're fine. Like I said, like I was telling you when we were dropping the beer off earlier today, I'm like, oh man, like wait till he watches Legend of Korra. That show did right. Like, oh, someone that plane exploded. Don't worry, Nickelodeon made sure for them to draw in a guy parachuting out with a plane exploding. So, seems to get too rambly. It's okay, you know.
I know. All right, let's take a break real quick, talk about the beer that we have on the show today. I'll let you take it away because you're the one that picked it up today. So, what do we got?
So summer's closing. Summer loving. We had our blast. Summer loving. And it happened so fast. And, you know. We're wrapping up. We're going back to school. So it's kind of the last hurrah for something summery to have. Something, you know, sunny and delightful. Makes you think of, like, you know, the warm rays of the sun and the sand on the beach. So anyway, I went to our local packy store. I just grabbed something random. I didn't put too much thought into it. I saw it. I was like, oh, that's different. Got it. We've done Nairn Gansett out here before. One of these days we'll have to do Jaws, you know. Haven't done that yet.
Yeah.
But we've done a couple of Nairn Gansett's for a while before they reopened in Rhode Island back in their original home. They're being brewed by Jenny, which in Rochester, which New York's oldest brewery, which we're also, excuse me. Whoa. You know, I'm like you right now. You know, it's one of our favorite breweries to have and review. So, I mean, as much I do like Nairn Gansett, especially like their regular Gansett, I do like their seasonal offerings. Have always been kind of hit or miss. Some of them are good, some of them aren't. But I'm always like, if I see something new Gansett, Nairn Gansett wise, I'm always, you know, I'm going to buy it and try it and see what it's like. Just like Guinness, you know. Guinness ain't that great anymore, but you know what? Anytime I see them pump out something new, I get FOMO. I was like, I gotta try that. So they had a summer variety pack. And this summer variety pack is like a traditional variety pack. And no bullshit. They didn't throw in like a random stock beer in there. You get three different beers in there. You get the Fresh Cash Blonde Ale, a Session IPA, and a Summer Crusher Summer Lager beer, say. It's supposed to be like a lager or ale. I can't tell.
Yeah, I think it is a lager.
Can't really tell, but it doesn't really matter. But you get four of each. Not a bad deal. And it's a nice way to kind of close out the summer. This here, Summer Crusher, it's pretty delightful, pretty refreshing, pretty good. It reminds me a lot of Sam's Summer, but probably, like I said, probably because it is a lager and not an actual ale. It's definitely not as weedy and bready. You get a big hit of like lemon, a little bit of wheatgrass, really bready, malty end. Kind of, like one thing that kind of brings it down is like it's really adjuncty at the end with that maltiness. Like it goes from kind of being like a nice breadiness to pair with it to something a little lingering, but it's not bad at all. It's really refreshing. It's really nice. The only thing that was not nice about this pack is I got fucked on the price again. Other than that, because a Narragansett 12 pack should not be $24, but and I didn't know that after until I got rained out again, but it's not bad. It'd be nice to have every now and then as a summer seasonal.
Yeah, I think that the Summer Crusher is pretty good. It's got a nice full-bodied flavor to it. The lemon does come out quite a bit. It does have a malty weediness to it that I think works really well. It's very crushable, so that's exactly what you want from this type of lager, summer ale style. And I do think that it is similar to Sam's Summer in the fact that it does have that like lemony, very quenchable taste to it. Like you, I do agree that the end of the beer with that like malt fall off, whatever it is, leaves a little bit of like a lasting bitterness taste to it. So that's probably the only downside to this beer, I think, is kind of has like that ending bitterness that it doesn't necessarily work as well as it should. But other than that, I think it's a really tasty beer, one that I would put in my cooler for a nice hot summer day. And again, as we come to the end of summer, it's kind of dying down out there. It's not as hot, but at the same time, just went on a run today. This is really quenching my thirst, so I do appreciate the Summer Crusher, and I do agree with the name. It is a crushing beer, easy to go down. Definitely one to check out if you're just out and about on the beach, something like that, want something easy drinking, not too complex. This is a good beer for that. So yeah, nice job.
Say it says that in line that it's a citra ale. Summer, they call it the summertime citra ale because it's in the gone but not forgotten section.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I'm on their website right now.
Huh, that's weird. I mean, Untappd lists it as a lager, so it's weird.
Well, I mean, potato, potato.
And then fucking Beer Advocate lists it as an American blonde ale, so.
Well, as I say,
we'll never know.
On the Arkansas Summer Crusher on their website, it still says Summertime Citra Ale, so. But, you know, what I like is, and you all like this, it says, pair for food with white fishes like cod, halibut, and swordfish. And it's like, that sounds delightful, with an arugula salad and goat cheese. Mmm. Sounds delicious.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta agree with you there, though. I think the Summertime Citra Ale is the same thing as the Summer Crusher. They changed the name.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Huh. Interesting. Interesting. And what it took silver medal at the Tastings World Beer Championships to.
Sold on merit.
All right. Thanks for the beer this week. And
as we head right into pumpkin and Marzen season.
True. I've already been into the Marzens, so you just wait for fucking I'll get you a sloop for next week for sure.
I thought about getting it for this week for us to do it because it sounds so tempting, but I didn't see it out, so I didn't grab it.
Probably because I got the only one that they had.
That's sad.
I will be throwing you one your way, just so you know.
We're going to have to do a video podcast of us, you know, drinking Marzins in a boot and eating soft pretzels with beer cheese. And we'll be wearing, I'll wear my lederhosen and you can wear a nice dirndl.
Yeah, absolutely. There's I think we will probably have a few Oktoberfests on here, because I do want to order that KCBC Oktoberfest too, and get that in. So catch those on our Halloween episodes. All right, on to the Road Warrior. Let's talk about this movie. One thing I want to point out is, you know, George Miller, he's been an eclectic director for sure. You know, he's kind of been all over the place. We kind of made mention of that last week when we talked about how you can kind of go, we could kind of do a George Miller month and go from like Mad Max and then do Babe. Or,
well, technically Babe 2. He wrote and produced, I think, Babe, but
yeah,
Babe 2, Pig in the City.
Yep. Or you could do, you know, you could go on to do like Happy Feet, you know, things that he's directed that are kind of sit outs, you know, or even like just really eclectic stuff. The Witches of Eastwick, fucking just all kind of all over the place in what he's done. And yet he's been very consistent in his output of, you know, fairly good movies.
We've also done another George Miller movie. We've done The Twilight Zone.
That's right. He did the Nightmare at 20,000 Feet segment,
yeah.
Which was a remake of the...
Shatner.
Sterling Shatner collaboration from the Twilight Zone series.
Spock.
And George Miller got to direct the inestimable John Lithgow for that one.
Ah, what a delight, John.
The man who would not allow dancing.
I can't remember why, but we were talking about Footloose at work the other day. And I started saying, breaking into the Never Never Dance.
Yeah, maybe because it's an amazing movie.
What are we doing, Footloose?
I don't know. I do love Footloose. It's a great movie. I don't know if I should say it's a guilty pleasure or something else, but I do.
It's not
legitimately
a, that's,
like,
no. No, it's not a guilty pleasure. Stop. It's a great movie. Guilty pleasure is something you'd be ashamed of saying you like. Are you ashamed to say you love Footloose?
No.
It's not a guilty pleasure.
Ever since he heard, but you, let's hear it for the boy.
Let's say it was a guilty pleasure film is like Roland Emmerich's The Patriot. It's a terrible film. Also stars Mel Gibson.
I love it.
I love it.
No, that's a guilty pleasure.
It is horrible history, but I love it. Footloose is just a great film.
It is. All right, back to Mad Max 2. What I was saying is, you know, George Miller's kind of been all over the place, and yet very consistent with his output. And he's one of those directors that has managed to not get worse with time, or not, you know, not have movies that fail to reach the pinnacle of his output, which you could say about some of the major directors in horror. You know, Wes Craven definitely had a lot of poor and poorly received movies in the, you know, the end of his output. John Carpenter, last few movies, as we did in the Carpenter series that we did, not so good. But George Miller, still going strong. Mad Max Fury Road released in 2015, and that may have been one of his most highly regarded movies that he's released, including Mad Max and The Road Warrior. So it is interesting to see that George Miller has not, you know, kind of lost the touch with time. It's, you know, he's always kind of had a good handle on direction. And I think we see in The Road Warrior a really good precursor to what he would do in Mad Max Fury Road, because this movie has a lot of long-term chase sequences and action scenes that work really well and are a little bit, you know, reminiscent of the time period, but work really, really well in the context of this movie. Because The Road Warrior is a very truncated 90 minutes long. It is not, you know, a drawn-out movie like The Delta Force. It gets in, it gets out, and it has a very limited plot to it. Would you agree?
No, I agree. It's definitely, and as we said when we reviewed Fury Road and saw it in theaters, it's basically a soft remake of Road Warrior. Basically, you know, same concept, same ideas. They just like a lot more money to pour into the action and, you know, what's going on. So it goes from an hour, you know, and a 30-minute long film into 2 hours. But no, The Road Warrior's definitely a quick, here's a setup, here's what's going on, here's what's going to happen. Go. There's, you know, it's very brisk and very short in its storytelling and its plot points, and they're not really the main focus of what's going on. All you need to know is we get the introduction, you know, we get the preamble of what happened in the first Mad Max film. The world's, you know, in disarray. People need fuel to keep going. Society's collapsed. Max used to be a cop, and he's no longer a cop. And now he's on the road, just traveling.
Yeah, and it kind of gives us all of that in a voiceover with a person, like a, you know, an unnamed narrator, basically. Someone who's just kind of delivering this information. And it, again, it's information that you can take either from Mad Max and have it be a recap from the original, or you can not know about Mad Max and just kind of get this information as a backstory and then, you know, go from there with The Road Warrior. You don't need...
You don't even have a name for Max, because he's just blank asshole. I will do whatever it takes to survive. I don't care who I fuck over. I just want gas to keep going down the road.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that this film actually goes into that pretty well, because not too long into the movie, you kind of see Max encounter a couple of people. Like he meets up with the guy that is piloting the gyroplane or the autogyro. Bruce Spence plays that guy, the gyro captain. He's a weird guy. He almost gets, you know, ambushed by him, and then using his ingenuity, he's able to get away from him. And then they become, you know, what the gyro captain would call like teammates. Because he keeps saying throughout the movie they make a good team, but really Max doesn't really count him as a, you know, a team member. It's just somebody who he uses when he needs help. And you right away, you kind of see the morality at play here, because they're kind of tracking these vagabonds, these you know, bandits that are out in the wasteland. And Max has got his binoculars out. The gyro captain's got his like fucking periscope thing that he's pulls out of his shirt, which is actually pretty funny. Because when Max sees it, he's like, "What the fuck are you doing with that thing?" Basically. But they see these guys, bandits, attack some people with a woman and a man. The man's kind of being held, and the woman is obviously getting raped. And Max takes off in his car, and it kind of looks like, oh, he's going to help them. And, you know, the gyro captain's kind of paying attention to that. And all of a sudden, Max is, like, fucking off elsewhere. And you kind of get that morality of, like, ah, I guess Max doesn't really care that a woman is being raped and murdered in front of him. You know, it's not about saving people. It's about saving Max. What did you think about that scene?
It's great. It's great. It's just like the fucking video game. And you're playing Mad Max the game, and like, oh, you're driving, all of a sudden these assholes come and, you know, take you out. And it's brutal, but it's like a, you know, It's like a, it's a really good brutal because, like, you know, they just take out the dune buggy with the two of them in there, and they shackle the one guy up, and, you know, I'm not saying it's great that they violently rape this woman, but, you know,
I think it sets up, you know,
sense. It makes sense for what's going on, and if you think about, like, the logistics of everything, it's like, oh yeah, you know. It's kind of made me chuckle too, because, like, the only, you know, a lot of the 70s films where you have, you know, acts of rape, it's always like this fun little gang excursion. Here's the one guy in the desert sand of 110 degrees, thrives for 3 seconds, and then someone takes her out with a crossbow bolt.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh yeah, it's not.
I kind of inappropriately chuckled at that because I was like, "That's fucking weird." But
well, I think, like, but, I mean, it's not explicit. It's not.
No, it's not like, you know, you're watching. I spit on your grave. But, you know, there's just, like, you get to see the clothes being ripped, her being naked, and then the guy lies on top of her for 2 seconds, and then she gets taken out by a crossbow bolt.
Yeah. I mean, Miller gets across the idea, whatever, what's happening. It's not, you know, insensitive or explicit. It's really just showing kind of that morality of Max. And at that point, you're kind of questioning him as your main character. You know, you would like to see him intervene, and at the same time, you realize it doesn't really make sense for him to do so. So there's kind of like that morality at play that kind of sets up the atmosphere of this, you know, post-apocalyptic condition, that there are these bad guys out here in the desert, and sometimes you can't stop every one of them. You can't, you know, you can't intervene every time. And I think it sets that up really nicely.
Very witchery.
Sure.
You know, Geralt, like, I can't intervene in everything. And plus, if you think about it too, in the grand scheme of everything, he can't run down there with this one shotgun shell to take on 5 guys. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, because the
it's just a nice little, like, anarchistic to show, like, the world's in chaos, it's an anarchy, it's every person for themselves, and Max is no stranger to that. He's not above that.
Yep, and it shows too, you know, the type of world that Max is living in, where it's not like everybody has a bunch of ammo lying around. It's hard to come by. It's not like you can just, like, go out and find some more bullets. So you have to pick and choose your battles and what you're going to do and not do.
Well, he's in Australia, not America. So there's not going to be.
That's true. There's a dearth of ammo and guns there.
I mean, I know it's before the buyback that they had in Australia in the 90s after, like, the massive shooting, but I mean, it's still, they're not going to have the rounds, like, you know, we'll be fine in America if everything ever becomes post-apocalyptic, because you can, walk out the door and trip on a fucking gun. A little different, you know, out in the bush.
That's right. So let's talk about the gyro captain. Dude, I would not be caught dead in that fucking death trap of a machine.
No, that's absolutely not. Like, absolutely not.
he's zooming overhead, like. Yeah.
Absolutely not. That'd be, especially if you know, like, these assholes are roaming around, like Lord Humongous. No, you'd just be fucking cannon fodder for him. Like, hey, that asshole's flying above us again. You know what I mean? Shoot their fucking crossbow bolts at you. So, no, fuck that. If anything, I'd destroy that thing. But didn't you like the titties on his, like, one, like, you know, wing thing?
Oh yeah, I did see that. Yep.
On the back, like, you know, it's like the Enola Gay.
he's got a nice tasteful titties on there. And not only that, but you know, he has a nice little, what do you call that? Like, nice little pilot's helmet, too, that he wears literally the whole time.
Yeah, he looks like the Red Baron.
he looks like the, sort of like the meth head Red Baron, I would say.
Oi there, boy, how's it going?
I'll
make you a fine frozen pizza.
I do look too after our first encounter with him. You know, obviously it's tense and stuff when he meets up with Max. But later on, you know, as he becomes friends and they kind of get into this camp with the other people who are trying to save their gas, he wants to, you know, get with this woman that's there. And he's tapping her on the shoulder like, come on, let's go, let's go. They're like, whole town is about to be attacked by Lord Humongous and his, you know, obviously he's just like, come on, let's go. Let's get my auto gyro and have, you know, mile high sex, you know, let's. Come on.
She looks like she's like 17.
Yeah, she does too. Yeah, it looks like he's, you know, trying to catch some jailbait there.
And it's funny too, because they literally just meet and she's like, I don't know if I can go with you. I want to go, but I don't know. And it's like, the answer is you don't go.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much, no offense to Bruce Spence, but there's not much in this movie that makes you think like, oh yeah, the gyro captain, he must have something going on. I mean, maybe he has the golden dick. He just pulled it out. And she's like, you know, but the film does not really make much, you know, it doesn't show us why she would be so immediately ready to go with him.
No, it's definitely that she just doesn't want to die in the camp. I mean, other than that, it's very slipshod.
I mean, that's kind of the magic, though, about The Road Warrior is that, again, there's really, really little, like
connection.
Yeah, no real story. That's basically what you can glean from this is Max stumbles on a camp. They have gas. Humongous.
Not only that, they're fucking Daniel Day-Lewis, and you know, There Will Be Blood, sitting there, you know, oil and then refining it into gas. Like, who there knows how to refine this oil that they're fucking taking out of the ground into gas? Which one of these assholes, like,
not,
you know?
Not only that, but I think it's pretty funny because not only do they just show that they have this refinery there, obviously you can see all the, you know, all the equipment and stuff, but they're like almost rubbing it in their face, like Lord Humongous' clan's face. Because they got like a fucking flamethrower that they're just flamethrowing randomly when they first show the city.
There's just like somebody randomly like, yeah, there's a flamethrower on our. What a waste of gas, too. You'd think you'd be trying to conserve and you're like, yeah, rip them.
That's what I was thinking. But no, they're like doing donuts out in the sand and they're fucking blowing the flamethrower for no reason. I know you would think like the flamethrower, especially because it has such limited range. Oh, excuse me.
Bless
you. Thank you. Oh, no.
What you get? Wow.
The flamethrower has such limited range, you would think, like, wow, don't be using that. Oh, my God.
Jeez. Oh, my Lord.
I know. I got a tickle in my nose there. Sorry about that, everyone. It has such limited range, though. You'd think, like, you'd be like, use that as a last resort when you can literally set someone on fire.
Nope, they're just hitting it left and right whenever they want. Like, yeah.
I know, it's pretty funny.
I thought at first, like, you'd think at first, like, maybe that's Humongous' camp. But no, it's just some assholes.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning, it kind of looks like that because, you know, they're outside doing donuts and driving around and bullshit like that. You think, like, oh, it's just Humongous doing, like, stupid shit outside. But no, it's their camp. But again, like, you would think, too, you would probably not want to make your camp here at the facility. You'd want to have guards here, of course, but you wouldn't want to make your camp there. You'd want to be camping somewhere else.
I don't know, no, because you'd want to be protecting it. But at the same time, like, you can only do for so long, because, again, they're, like, right smack dab in the fucking like desert, so there ain't much food for them to cultivate. So I mean, it's kind of hard. It's, you know, it's understandable that they'd want to move on out of there as soon as they could to, you know, find greener grass.
So when they you know they basically, Lord Humongous's tribe, they come and they're like, we know you got the gas here, we know you got a lot of it, we want the gas. And if you guys clear out now, we'll let you live. And that's our deal for you. And we're going to come back in one day. Which, you know, for bad guys, especially with like Lord Humongous,
that's really nice.
Let them make a decision over 24 hours. No, that's, and that's why all of the people in this town are like,
he's kind of a reasonable guy. You know, he wears like a fucking studded Jason Voorhees mask, but he's naked and he's fucking ripped to shit. He's kind of a reasonable guy. So
if anything, wouldn't he inspired Jason Voorhees?
Yeah,
He this came out in, you know, 81, so that's before Jason was riding around with his hockey mask.
No. Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. You're right. Before the hockey mask. Yep. So you're right. He inspired it. But still, you would think that, you know, it makes sense that they're thinking he's kind of a reasonable guy, especially because for all intents and purposes, they do show that Humongous is kind of not out for blood in the same way that his, like, underlings are, right? Because, like, the one guy, the guy with the assless chaps, he's constantly... Wes.
Don't you like his name is Wes?
Wes. Yeah. He's constantly, undermining Humongous, you know, what he says. So it's pretty funny, too, because at the end, when they're actually attacking, he's got him on a fucking chain leash, because he calls him a puppy. So it's pretty funny. But, you know, you get a nice discrepancy between Wes and Humongous, because Wes obviously has no limit to what he'll do. Humongous is more of like, let's wait and see what they are going to do before we actually attack them. It's kind of a fun little dynamic that you have there. And of course, Wes too is pissed off because his lover was killed by a fucking flying boomerang that got chucked into his face, thrown by the Pharaoh kid. So it's understandable that he's angry. I love that boomerang too. It's great. It's a cool little device. The film makes use of fast forward to make things seem like it's going faster. And that's not just with like the boomerang. It's used a lot in this movie for all the stunts that are done with like the cars, you know, so crashing into things or making things look like they're happening faster than they are. It uses like a nice little fast forward. It stands out now because it looks a little cheap or cheesy, but I think at the time it was a good way to be able to safely do stunts while still making it look real. Fast forward is employed quite a bit, actually, just to make things look like they're happening faster than they are. Do you feel in this movie, especially, that it does share some stylistic connections with the Evil Dead?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the way George Miller uses the speeding up of things to kind of play, but they're not kind of used in a cheap way. Yeah, no, it definitely kind of is.
And a lot of like the dolly scenes, like zooming in and out, having like the Max on the hill, like kind of zooming into him and stuff like that, really reminded me of a lot of what Raimi would do in Evil Dead as well.
At the same time, too, though, I almost feel like this with like the gyrocopter, like, you know, Captain Gyro. That was literally just there, like, so they could have an excuse. Like, this is how we're going to get our air shots.
Yeah. That makes sense. There are a lot of air shots.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, though, I think that this movie does a really good job of most of its car chases. You know, because it's a little bit different than Mad Max Fury Road. Mad Max Fury Road is very similar to Road Warrior in that it does not have like a really strong plot to it where it's like spelled out for the audience, but it does have these vignettes basically where, and I think we talked about this on the show that we did with the Mad Max Fury Road, where it has like, you know, 20 minutes of action, 20 minutes of give you some plot, 20 minutes of action, and it kind of does these vignettes throughout the entire movie. With The Road Warrior, we don't get that to the same extent where it seems like there's like these little vignettes that happen. But at the same time, though, we do get a lot of moments of just like, you know, you'll get some action, then you'll get some storyline, then you'll get some action and get some storyline. And that kind of goes throughout until the very end for about 20 minutes, which is a huge chunk of time in this movie, especially since it's only 90 minutes long. About 20 minutes, the end of the movie is basically relegated to a car chase scene that is pretty epic. And I was really quite astounded by the extent that they were able to do with this chase sequence, because I think it works really well and is very tense throughout and manages to conjure up a lot of what Miller was able to do, obviously more contemporarily within Fury Road. It's really a precursor to that. What do you think about that end chase sequence?
It's great. It's really tense. It's really good. Works really well still to this day. Obviously, it, you know, as good and fun as it is and well shot and adrenaline rushing as it is, especially if you've seen Fury Road, it's hard not to compare. And it's hard not, like, you know, and I'm not taking points away from this film because, you know, Fury Road, but, like, it's hard not to compare. But I do think it's really good. Action's a lot of fun. You know, Max driving the trucker, you know, the diesel rig and, you know, running off Humongous's goons while they shoot crossbow bolts at him. A lot of fun. I think, if I remember correctly, I'm not sure, I'll have to double check, but I could be wrong on this. Maybe I'm thinking of Mad Max 1. But the scene where the guy flips off that bike and, like, does that awkward flip and shit, I can't remember if it's that one or something, a stunt from Mad Max 1. I think the guy almost died doing that. And I mean, there's a lot of stunts in this film. Yeah, where you could be like, somebody should have died during that, because they're incredibly well done, and but so brutal. Like the one where the guy gets caught up, as he's trying to, like, the tire, shoot the tire, and then he gets caught underneath the rig, and then gets flattened, and then shot right out. Like, it's so fucking cool. It's like so visceral, and
yeah, they do a great job with, you know, showing those car chases. I mean, obviously, too, you can tell, like, sometimes there are dummies, and, you know, you can tell those happen. But at the same time, like, it does look really visceral, and especially with, like, the tanker smashing through cars and shit, really great. I think they do a really good job with showcasing that part of it, the very, like, physical element to it, blasting through cars and literally cars sometimes like just exploding into parts is really great. They did a great job of the stunts, and I can definitely see how in that one sequence where the guy, you know, flies off the bike, you can tell that looked pretty damn dangerous. You know,
I would have hated them and the stunt coordinator and the people doing the stunts in this film. Like, you want me to do what, George?
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but, like, you know, in the 80s, too, things were just not as, as well documented and stuff that we have now. So, you know, it was easier to cut corners back then, too. So, it's crazy to think, you know, what they accomplished in this movie, especially when you see some of those stunts. The explosions, too, are really great. I mean, again, you have exploding cars in the same sense of, like, Death Wish style exploding cars sometimes. You know, a Molotov cocktail to the car, boom, it explodes. Like, fucking, there's just gas leaking out everywhere from the gas tank or something that caused it to explode. But explosions are great. The scene where they explode the entire compound as the guys storm in, and they're like, oh, yeah, we fucking got the compound. Like, let's just take it. And, you know, it explodes into, like, fiery bits. That's great. It looks, I don't know if that's a set that they exploded or if that's truly, like, a miniature. Hard to tell. But whatever it is, it looks really good. Especially that aerial shot kind of gives you the whole scope of it. Looks really good. And then the other thing that I like too is a lot of the visceral like crashes, like when Max crashes his car, flips, you know, 15 times down the road into a ravine or something. That's another great crash.
Brutal too. It's, you know, real brutal. Cause he comes, you know, you see him trying to crawl out of the car as, you know, he's bloodied and, you know, disoriented.
Yeah. What do you think about them killing the dog?
Oh, they killed fucking Bluey Healer.
His name is just Dog.
Well, I mean,
you know, I'm surprised that they don't really bring it up after either. It's not like, you know, Max is like, I'm out for revenge for my dog.
No, that's John Wick, isn't it?
Yeah, it's John Wick, but they don't bring it up. They're just like,
is that true? Why John Wick's on a mission because his dog got killed?
I haven't seen the movies, so
I haven't seen the movies either, but I heard that's part of.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they don't bring it up. They don't. There's like nary a word said about dog again. Max is just like, nah, I don't know. It's fucking dog. Just tagging along. I don't know. It's his own damn fault. Shouldn't have tried to fight.
Poor Bluey Healer got killed.
That's right.
He's got the dog nice and trained too, like, you know,
yeah,
to sneak out and do his bidding for him. All right.
What do you think about the film's score? Because it's very bombastic, and sometimes I got a whiff of John Williams there, Star Wars era John Williams.
No, that's John Williams all the time. It's good, overused in some points. Because I do think the film would have benefited a little bit more from brevity when it comes to the score. Let the scenes kind of play out and not have a bombastic score kind of taking over the scene. It's not bad, but like I said, and I do think the score is really, you know, pretty good and does fit, you know, pretty well. But I do think at times, like, it is kind of overused because I think, you know, you want it to be a little bit more understated because you want, you know, to feel the loneliness of, like, what's kind of going on at the moment. And when you got, you know, Welcome to Jurassic Park playing, it does get tiresome at times.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's maybe a little bit overused, but I think it's pretty good in most scenarios, especially the ending. It just kind of increases the suspense that you get from the movie as the action scenes are taking place. But yeah, it's a little bit overused, but I think it's pretty good. It definitely works in this context, I think. And then I wanted to ask too, how do you feel about the feral kid who kind of like becomes a little like child that influences Max a little bit throughout the movie? Think about that inclusion.
Don't need him. Don't need a little feral kid throwing boomerangs at people's heads. I get it because at the end you find out the narrator that showed up for the opening credits is actually him, and he's the new leader, the new successor of the tribe that got away, and he's telling the tale of the Road Warrior. So I get it for that purpose, but overall it does kind of seem like yeah, there's a kid here, hooray.
Yeah. I like when he's in the truck and trying to climb into the truck and Max just kind of like one arms him and fucking throws him into the passenger seat. It's great. Love that.
What did I say? Speaking of that, what did you think of the whole The Road Warrior bit where like it's him standing on the road next to his interceptor with his shotgun and it's slowly panning out? Didn't that make you think of In the Eyes of the Ranger?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. Yeah.
The unsuspecting stranger had better know from right.
Yeah.
See, what is Walker Texas Ranger but putting Mad Max into Texas, making him a, you know, Texas Ranger?
They should.
Think about that.
They should have. I mean, I think, though, that they make a lot of... The Texas Ranger has too much personality. And Max... Max just isn't...
Are you sure about that?
Well, they wanted the Texas Ranger to have too much more personality.
Walker said I have AIDS.
But I think with Max, they really want him to be sort of like a speechless, you know, unnamed person, basically. Max could be anybody. And in this movie, it really comes out because he only has like 16 bits of dialogue in this movie. And he doesn't really say anything. He just is there. And the film makes a good note of how he doesn't really have any motivation to do anything, because I think the one guy that leads the group talks about that. And he's like, why, what are you doing out here in the wasteland? Like, you're no better than these, you know, other people that are trying to steal gas, because that's literally all you care about is just getting gas to get to the next place. But where are you going? What are you doing? You're not doing anything. You're just roaming from place to place. And I think the film kind of tries to get that across. It's like, you know, Max here is not really doing anything with himself and just surviving. And there should be more to life than just surviving. So I think that's, you know, it's kind of interesting. I think, like, you know, if you brought him into Texas Ranger sort of thing, a little too much personality for that. What do you think about, you know, what are the overarching themes of The Road Warrior? Like, if you boil it down to like what Miller was writing about specifically, what do you think he's trying to say here?
We're gonna kill ourselves, and we're gonna destroy the planet.
Do you think it's sort of you know, commentary on imperialism as well?
Imperialism? Oh, Jesus Christ. Imperialism? No.
You don't think so?
Who isn't doing the imperialism?
Well, I mean, in this case, you know, you have the...
Lord Humongous?
Yeah,
he's more of a... That's a marauder. They're not really set up anywhere. To be imperialistic, yeah. You'd have to be somebody who's based somewhere of a power of strength. They're literally just, you know, roaming around, savaging and sacking the countryside.
Yeah, I mean,
I've never heard that analysis before. That you'd find that somewhere?
No, I mean, I'm asking contextually, because, you know, there is the idea of infiltrating a location for their cast. I mean, specifically, that really does apply.
No, I don't think it's imperialistic, because I think if you're in a state of a world where everything's been dissolved and society's collapsed and civilization, nation states, etc., have collapsed, and you're in a state of anarchy, it's not really imperialism if you are a marauding gang and then are going to steal someone's oil. I'm not saying it's, you know, justified. I'm saying that you're in a different state. To have imperialism, you have to have actual states that, you know, are competing.
Sure.
Here, yeah. It's just more, it's the anarchy. So it's just the whole Darwin's law of, you know, fighting to survive and doing whatever it takes to survive.
Mm-hmm.
It is critiquing, though, that barbarity, obviously, because our group that's in this town that is refining the oil and the gas, they make it a point to say, you know, and they tell Max, too, like, you're no, as you said, too, like, they're saying that he's no better than Lord Humongous because, you know, he does whatever it takes to survive. He's garbage. He's filth. He doesn't have humanity in him. He doesn't have that dignity in him where after, you know, he helps some because he's, again, 2/3 of this film, he's very self-righteous and not self-righteous, but very self-serving. He's like, you know, when he finds the guy that, you know, after his lady friend was raped and killed and he's tied up, he's like, listen, I just want your fucking gas. Take me to your gas.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, yeah, I'll get you gas if you just get me there. And then he gets there and the guy dies and they're like, look, the guy said he's going to give me gas. I just want my fucking gas and I'm going to get out of here. And then they're like, well, he's dead. So your contract with him doesn't exist anymore. And then they're like, if you do this, you'll get our gas. And then he says, well, what he'll do to get the gas. And then he does it. And then they're like, all right, you're going to help us, right? And he's like, no, I got my gas. So, no, I don't think it's really a critique on imperialism. I think it's more environmental and just a critique on society as it collapses into anarchy. Excuse me.
Other than that, did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about? We didn't mention?
Fucking Mel Gibson looks like a fucking beautiful, amazing man. That leather-clad suit.
Yeah.
With his rickety, I love too, with his little leg brace, and then the one part where they go and oil his leg brace so it doesn't squeak as he's going to wander off, you know, and you're like, hold on. With his gas, you know, as he's carrying on his back, like he's a milkmaid, but with, instead of like four, you know, buckets of milk, he's got four, you know, tanks of gas, and he's wandering out to his interceptor.
I do love the sound design in this movie, because I love like all the leather, you know, leather sound effects, like the, you know, just the movement of the leather, the sloshing of the gas, stuff like that. Great.
I thought at the end Wes was going to put on a pair of pants instead of just the chaps, because he's going to be hopping around truck to truck and, you know, flying around and maybe get sand in his ass. But no, he's a trooper.
He stayed
chaps the entire time.
That's right. He's a tough guy. I mean, you wouldn't catch me out there, you know, just once sitting down on a hot sandy, you know, burning my ass cheek because I sat on hot sand. I would have been like, I'm putting on pants. But no, he's you know, sticking to the drip that he's got going on there.
So who do you think's the villain, though? Do you think it's Humongous or do you think it's Wes?
I mean, I would probably have to go with Wes. You know, he seems to be leading the opposition and against Humongous's orders most of the time, which is why we see him get put on the leash there at the end. I mean, of course, at the end, Humongous does attack, and he makes the decision that they move forward and attack. But I think for the most part, Wes was the one that really went out of his way to be the opposition for most people, especially because we always see him like tracking down people and fucking murdering them, or, you know, in the case of the woman and man, they're raping them, tracking them down so like one of his crew members could rape them, stuff like that. I think Wes is the real villain in this movie, at least.
Because who knows? Maybe Humongous was really willing to allow them to
just let them go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he seems, you know, again, they don't really go out of their way to show Humongous as anything other than what he's presented as on screen. You know, just a guy who leads a roaming band of, you know, men who are also trying to find gas. And again, they're not really that different. I mean, besides, you know, being sadistic in a lot of sense, they're not that different from Max. I don't think Humongous is like, by any stretch of the imagination, innocent here. Of course, they string up two of the people from the camp and, you know, basically like crucify them. So I don't think we can say that he's a good guy, but I think Wes is like the major bad guy in this movie.
Didn't you like how they had him like on like the little platforms and one guy was yelling, "Roll out, Colin!" No. Don't shoot, for the love of God.
Yeah, he just keeps repeating that.
And then got brutally killed. God, what an awful death. They got crashed into the truck, and you get to see, like, you know, and obviously it's dummies, but their heads, like, smash into the diesel truck because they're still being like, you know, chased. You know, they're part of the chase, and it's like, God, that's awful.
Yeah, the movie can be particularly brutal at times. You know, I've, of course, you don't see it in like its full on gore, but it can be brutal, and I think that that works to the film's advantage too, because it just shows like the extent of this post-apocalyptic wasteland. I wonder where they filmed to be able to just drive long stretches of, you know, desert road without fucking...
Thing New South Wales.
Yeah. It's a cool place. It's cool. I love, like, all of the, the dust streams and stuff like that that shoot up behind the cars. It's great. So it's just, like, all around nice atmosphere.
Yeah. Shot in the outback of New South Wales.
Nice. It's like a whole new world.
You know what I
want
right now?
What?
You know what I want right now? Speaking
of Fosters?
No, better. Nice blue and onion from the outback.
That's true. Delicious. I've had kangaroo. I've tried it. It's kind of gamey.
Sorry. Sheep meat.
Thank you. All right. So on a scale of 0 to 10, belated boomerangs that cut off people's fingers, and then people laugh at it. Just like,
oh, that's so weird.
His fingers are cut off.
He laughed at it. He laughed at it, too.
He was just after the adrenaline or whatever of just it kicked in. He's like,
my fucking fingers got cut off on his fucking
Maybe they're prosthetic the way they get, you know, shoved off.
Yeah.
Like, God, you little shit. I lost them in the wall.
Yeah, they kind of just, like, pop on. They're just like,
gone.
It's fucking funny. What would you give The Road Warrior, Mad Max 2?
I'll give it an 8.5 out of 10. This film really does hold up very well. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of good action. George Miller has a very good eye. It's in, it's out, you know. Very brisk, fun, easy watch. It's paced very well, you know. Even though the characters aren't the star, Mel Gibson does do a really good job as portraying, you know, Max. You know, Bruce Spence, Vernon Wells, you know, Kiel Neeson. They do a great job in their characters, respectively. You know, there's a lot going on here. It's very fun, really cool. It's just a great action movie. It's a fun, fun ride. I think the only problem with it is the fact that even though George Miller will never admit it, Fury Road is essentially a soft remake of The Road Warrior, and it does The Road Warrior better. Not the fault of this film, because, you know, 35-year difference, but this is a very fun film. It's great. It still holds up to today. The action, it's still very visceral. The chase is great. There's a lot of great stunt work in here, a lot of great action. If you like kind of chase scenes and driving, this is a great film to watch. There's a reason why this film is part of the cultural zeitgeist, and people, you know, regardless of whether or not you know anything about Mad Max, you at least know the name The Road Warrior. So Mad Max 2, I'd say 8.5 out of 10. It's a damn good film, and I had a lot of fun revisiting it.
Yeah, I would agree. I would give it an 8.5 as well. I think it's a really good movie. I think that it managed to do in 90 minutes like what should have been done in a lot of the other movies that we watched in this Red Hot 80s Action Summer series. It gets in, it gets out. It's really not there to mess around, and everything's better for it because, you know, again, we don't need a ridiculous amount of plot. And to be honest with you, the film doesn't really have that much in the way of dialogue either. It's mostly presented to you. The viewer can, you know, understand what's happening, what's going on, understand the motivation. They want gasoline. And that's pretty much it.
Gasoline.
Yeah. And that's all you really need in this sort of movie. And it does it really well. I think that, you know, in the scope of 90 minutes, this doesn't really lag at all. It manages to find a nice pacing throughout. And then it does do a nice little trade-off between action and then like kind of low, more scenes of lull and then more action. And the last 20 minutes are super effective because it really comes down to just a really long car chase sequence and a lot of action, and the stunts are truly commendable. Like Martin said, Fury Road is definitely doing this movie somewhat again, but with a better budget, you know, the ability to do new things that weren't available in 1981. So you can't really, you can compare them and then you can't, you know, there's obviously limitations that were with the Road Warrior that they just couldn't do. So I think when you think about it that way, this film is really, really well respected because of the stunts and the things that it does. And it's just a really fun movie that you should just experience. And probably it is one of the best in the Mad Max series. I think it's probably better than Mad Max. So I'll say that now. So yeah, 8.5 for me as well. Really fun movie. If you have not had the opportunity to see it, you should check it out. And that completes our Red Hot 80s Action Summer Part 3, Back to Duty. So we're going off duty now. For at least for action movies. But we're going to be back next week to start our Halloween season, because we always start that in September. It's crazy, right? Actually, and yeah, next week will be September 1st. So we'll be like right on the dot. We're like starting it right off the bat, which may give us a couple, maybe an extra week to get stuff in, because we got a busy season. We're going to be doing Halloween movies, but then we're also going to have to try to get Saw 10 in there at some point, of course, because we've done all the other Saws, so we've obviously I'm docked it. Yeah, that's got to get done, no matter how awful it is. Who knows? Are you excited for that one, by the way? Saw 10?
Well,
Saw 10.
I know nothing about it. I've been staying completely out of the loop, so...
I have as well. I haven't checked at all as to what it's about or what's going on. I do know Tobin Bell is in it. That's about it. That's all I know.
Was Spiral the last one?
Yes. Spiral was the last one.
So the whole a new Saw story
that died with Spiral. It's just like
that. Right. So we that only came out 2 years ago.
Yeah.
God, I feel old.
And
so what's Chris Rock doing? Oh wait, he died.
And I don't know. I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea what is in store for this movie. So I'm kind of excited
Jigsaw
because
came out in 20. And Jigsaw came out in 2017. God, that feels like yesterday.
And Jigsaw, though, it might feel like yesterday, but I don't remember a single thing that happened in that movie. There was a redhead in it. I remember that. I remember we had
prequel. It was a prequel.
Yeah.
That's what I remember. Like how like it all ties back into...
Yeah, sort of.
I know.
That's the thing. When you go to see like you're like, I don't fucking remember the lore anymore. Yeah, that's the...
Are you kidding me? Shawnee Smith and Tobin Bell are back? So what the fuck's Shawnee Smith doing back? Where's Costas Mandalore?
This is going to take place in some nether realm between 3 and 6 or something like that. That you're going to have to remember back to those and be like, what was the timeline?
You know what we're doing for... this year's Halloween, then?
We're just going to do the Saws again.
We're just going to revisit them.
We'll see. No, Saw 10 is actually coming out fairly early, considering the Halloween season. Normally, the Saws come out like right before Halloween, like, you know, October 20-something, somewhere around there. This year, it's September 29th, which kind of caught me by surprise. I would have thought it would come out later than that, but...
Okay. Wikipedia says it serves as both a direct sequel to Saw and a prequel to Saw 2.
Well, there you go.
So who the fuck wants that?
Who wants to see a
film? So it happens between Saw and Saw 2.
So does that mean fucking Donnie Wahlberg is going to be somewhere around?
Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
So we haven't solidified our Halloween episodes yet, but I think, are we going to try to do movies that actually take place on Halloween or have Halloween in them this time?
Sure.
We're going to do that as the theme. Because I don't want to do another Director's Month. I think we've done that twice in a row now. We'll get off of that. I think we'll head back towards actual movies that have Halloween in them. Because there's a lot of them still that we haven't done. So there's a lot to cover. I think that'll be fun. So if you want to hear about, you want to hear our Halloween episodes, we're starting next week. And it's going to be weekly until Halloween. You should subscribe to us on pretty much any podcast app that you can think of. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, our home base at anchor.fm, which is now Spotify. Just subscribe on there. Leave us a nice review. We're on Facebook and Twitter and Threads. You can find us on there, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. We have an email address at bloodandblackrumpodcast@gmail.com. Write to us. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you want to hear us cover. Keep that in mind. And you can donate to us on our Patreon at patreon.com/bloodandblackrumpodcast, where you can give us money and we'll put it back towards beer. So we appreciate that in advance. Thanks for listening to our Red Hot 80s Action Summer Part 3 Back to Duty this year. Truly appreciate that. Hope you enjoyed the four movies that we covered. And we are going to start Halloween next week. So you will definitely want to tune in. And until then,
take care.